President Putin is trying to break the people of Ukraine, hoping to weaken their resolve. But Ukraine and the Ukrainian people have shown time and again that they will not be broken.
We have to keep this in mind because, you know, the size of the Ukrainian army is not the problem because they haven't attacked Russia. The size of Russian army is a problem for all its neighbors. The size of Russian military budget is a problem for all. So we really need to see what kind of concessions are they willing to make.
Вы упомянули, что Дональд Трамп заявил о согласии Индии не закупать больше российскую нефть. Я больше ни от кого такого заявления не слышал, в том числе от премьер-министра Моди, от других индийских участников.
This is my video update on this Wednesday afternoon, February the 11th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off. Let's start things off with, should we go with Macron or should we go with Le Gobelin Vert or should we kick things off with Stunning and Brave? Let's go with Le Gobelin Vert. And the Financial Times is reporting that possibly Le Gobelin Vert will be calling elections come May. Elections combined with a referendum. And the reason that Zelensky could be calling elections in May is twofold, according to the Financial Times and their sources. Reason number one is because Zelensky is getting a lot of pressure, allegedly he is getting pressure from the Trump administration to hold elections and to give up Donbass so that the Trump administration can agree on a negotiated settlement with the conflict in Ukraine, and they would like that done by at least the beginning of summer, because after May or June, then the Trump administration will be focused on the midterm elections, and they won't be able to dedicate time to Project Ukraine. So Zelensky is under a lot of pressure to put together some sort of a referendum on the territory issue, to also hold elections. And according to the Financial Times, if he doesn't do this by the May-June timeframe, then there's a possibility that the United States will not provide Ukraine with whatever security guarantees they've been talking about. And the other reason that Zelensky is talking about elections is because, according to the FT, he believes that he can win elections in May. If he waits any longer, then perhaps he will lose those elections, but he feels that he's in a position, if he holds the elections in the next 3 to 4 months, that he could win the presidency. So that is the update there with Le Gobelin Vert. According to the Financial Times, Zelensky is planning elections in Ukraine and vote on peace deal. Trump administration has pressured Ukrainian leader to hold both votes by May 15th or risk losing security guarantees. Monsieur Podolyak, Monsieur Podolyak, what you think about idea that I hold elections in May, Monsieur Podolyak? What do you think about this idea, s'il vous plaît? Mr. President, Why are you always speaking French? Why are you trying to speak French, Mr. President? Monsieur Podolyak, I speak French now because I think it makes me more sophisticated. What do you think, Podolyak? Mr. President, you've always been sophisticated. Thank you, Podolyak. You're a very good friend. So let's move on now to Macron. What a great segue to Macron. And he's been given a lot of interviews, Macron. And he has been talking about dialogue with Russia. It is time for the Europeans to open up some sort of dialogue with Russia. Macron said that Europe agreed to the conflict with Russia, agreed to support Ukraine, agreed to the sanctions, agreed to the conflict with Russia in 48 hours when everything first started. So they agreed to everything very quickly, the sanctions, the weapons, all of it, within 48 hours, the support for Ukraine. But it's now very difficult to get the Europeans to agree to some sort of diplomacy with Russia, even though Macron believes that we are now at the end of the conflict in Ukraine. And his thinking is that if the Europeans do not get a seat at the table, then it's going to be the Americans and the Russians who will not only decide on the fate of Ukraine, but on the fate of Europe. And so Macron is urging European leaders to begin to open up dialogue with Russia. He is positioning himself as the chief negotiator, as the man for the job to engage with Russia. And he has already sent his envoy. This is true. France has already started the process by sending an envoy to Moscow a couple of days ago. So Macron is leading by example. Moscow, Paris resume technical levels talks as Macron urges re-engagement with Russia. Yeah, Peskov has confirmed in a statement that the envoy was in Moscow, the French envoy, and that there are some discussions now taking place for France and Moscow to France and Russia to start engaging in technical talks with one another. That is what Peskov revealed in a statement the other day. So Macron, the peacemaker. Macron, the peacemaker, huh? The lame duck French president who is now positioning himself as the man who will engage with Russia and will lead Europe into some sort of a negotiated peace with Russia, so that Europe is not cut out from the negotiations that are currently taking place between Russia, the United States, and Ukraine. I wouldn't trust Macron if I were the Russians. I would not trust Macron or the Europeans. We all remember the Minsk negotiations and the Minsk agreements, Minsk 1 and Minsk 2. And we know what Europe did with those agreements. And I would guess that Macron's play here is not only to safeguard his future to position himself as he winds down his tenure as president of France, to position himself as the leader of Europe, but to also try to trick Russia into some sort of a Minsk III type of agreement. And I wouldn't trust Macron. I would not trust Macron. No way, no chance. But Peskov said that they're talking. He said that Russia is open to discussing things with France, and they do have talks, technical talks. It looks like those are on the way. Those are being set up. I sense trickery from Macron and the Europeans. Hopefully the Russians have learned from the Minsk agreements. But we'll see. We will see. Stunning and brave. She is talking about demands that that Europe has of Russia. If there's going to be any kind of settlement in Project Ukraine, then according to Stunning and Brave, Russia's going to have to agree to a list of conditions. That is what Kaya Kallas is saying. She's telling Russia and the United States that there can be no deal with the conflict in Ukraine unless Europe is included. Any deal that is put together in the conflict in Ukraine, according to Kallas, has to get the approval of Europe. And so she's putting together a list of conditions, concessions to be presented to Russia. And step one is that she's going to put this list together and present it to EU officials. And then she's going to, once she gets the approval from EU officials, she's then going to take this list of demands and present it to Russia. I think we know what the demands are going to be, even though Reuters is reporting that we do not have any of the specifics as to what this list is going to be about. We know what Kallas is going to demand. She is going to demand a Russian capitulation, a freeze, a ceasefire, call it whatever you want. And she's going to demand a limit on the size of Russia's military. She's going to demand a limit on Russia's military budget, a limit on Russia's nuclear arsenal. She's already said this. She said this in a statement that she made 3-4 days ago. So that's pretty much what the demands are going to be from Kaya Kallas to Russia. She's making history. She is making history because it is going to be the first time ever in the history of the world that we have the losing side in a war making demands of the winning side, placing conditions on the side that is winning. She is making history, everybody. Kaya Kallas, according to Reuters, EU's Kallas to propose concessions that Europe should demand from Russia. Everybody around the table, including the Russians and the Americans, needs to understand that you need Europeans to agree, Kallas told a group of news agency reporters in Brussels. And for that, we also have conditions, and we should put the conditions not on Ukrainians, who have been already pressured a lot, but on the Russians. Kallas said she would propose a list to EU member governments in the coming days, ask what the list could include. She cited the return of all Ukrainian children abducted during the war and limitations on Russia's armed forces. She did not elaborate further. So it's not only to Russia. This is not only going to be presented to Russia, but it's also going to be presented to the Americans, because the Russians and the Americans, they need to understand that there can be no deal unless Europe is included. It's going to be very tricky for Kallas to present this list to Russia, because The Russians refuse to meet with her and will not see her. And the United States refuses to meet with Kallas. She's tried two or three times to get a meeting with Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and she has been denied both of those times. So I don't know how she's going to actually present her demands to Russia and to the United States, because she can't score a meeting with either of them, but we'll see. We'll see how she does it. Maybe she'll just announce it publicly to the world. And then Russia and the United States are going to get a look at Europe's demands that they have. So we have Netanyahu in the United States. He is going to be meeting with Rubio this morning, and then later on in the day, he will be meeting with U.S. President Trump. He has already met with Witkoff and Kushner. And of course, the reason for Netanyahu's trip to the United States, which he moved up a full week. He was supposed to go next week, but he decided to go to the United States 1 week earlier. The reason for all of this is because there is a sense that the Trump administration is starting to walk back the possible strike or a possible war with Iran, and they're starting to lean more towards a diplomatic solution. Witkoff, as he has been speaking with the Iranian foreign minister Arachi, he said that the talks are going well. He's positive about the progress of talks. Arachi has said the same thing. There are obvious big disagreements that both sides have. The Iranians are saying that they will not discuss any of the additional demands that the United States is putting on them with regards to no more ballistic missiles, limiting their ballistic missiles, limiting their access to their allies and their proxies. And you also have the uranium enrichment for the Iranians. The only thing that they want to talk about is the issue of the uranium enrichment. The United States has placed all these other demands. They've moved the goalposts. Obviously, the United States has moved the goalposts. At first, it was about uranium enrichment. Then it became about the protesters. And now the United States is making demands of Iran with regards to their proxies, to their allies in the region, with demands to ballistic missiles and for the Iranians to limit their supply and their production of missiles, which is nonsense. No sovereign country in the entire world would ever agree to that kind of demand. So these are demands that the United States has come up with, which are meant to be rejected. But the positive is that Witkoff and Arachi appear to be able to speak to one another and have found some sort of dialogue and understanding with each other. That's the positive. The negative is that they're very far apart, it seems, when it comes to the actual technical parts of the discussions. But anyway, Trump has, over the past week or two, it seems that he has kind of been shifting. That's the sense that Netanyahu probably has, is that Trump has been shifting away from an actual strike and more towards diplomacy. And so he pushed up his trip to the United States in order to urge the U.S. president to strike and to strike Iran big. And it looks like Trump is now starting to move back towards war with Iran. It looks like he is now shifting again, flip-flopping, the flip-flopper in chief. And he is talking about moving another aircraft carrier group to the region, which I think is kind of nonsense, because it's going to take a while for that strike group to make it to the Middle East. It's not going to happen in the next couple of days or even in the next couple of weeks. But then again, Trump has said that the United States has time, that the United States is not in any kind of rush. So he has said that as well. But he is talking about hitting Iran very, very hard if they do not agree to the demands being made of them. President Trump said Iran won't possess nuclear weapons nor ballistic missiles. The Iranians really want to make a deal. Either we make a deal or we have to do something very tough, like last time. If we do not reach an agreement with Iran, we will be forced to carry out very harsh action. I am considering sending an aircraft carrier to the region and additional forces. Look, the ballistic missiles thing is never going to happen. That is never, ever going to happen. And the uranium enrichment, if it was only about the uranium enrichment, that can be solved. That can be solved if there is a will to solve it. I just don't think there's much of a will. And with Netanyahu now in the United States, I imagine that everyone is expecting that Trump is going to move more towards Netanyahu's position and some sort of a strike. A big strike against Iran will be coming up. The last strike against Iran was supposed to have destroyed their uranium enrichment, right? That's what Trump was bragging about and boasting about. The last big strike. It was a strike never seen in the history of the world. The greatest military operation ever conducted in the history of the world. That's what Trump was saying. Iran has no more capability to create nuclear weapons, to enrich uranium, because the strike was the greatest military operation ever conducted, ever in the history of the planet, of the universe. That is what Trump was saying. Looks like it wasn't such a historic military operation. So we'll see what the outcome is with Netanyahu's trip to DC, to the US. This is his sixth or seventh trip to the United States since Trump became president, official trip. So let's talk about, how about what's going on in Hungary? I talked about the EU's plans yesterday and how they are looking to fast track Ukraine into the European Union. Reverse enlargement is what they're calling it. You enter the EU right away, and then you work towards fulfilling the requirements as an EU member state. Talk about humiliating Turkey, huh? Turkey's been trying to get into the European Union for the last 30 years, right? But they've never been able to fulfill the EU's requirements. And now you have the EU saying, you know what? You don't really need to fulfill the requirements if you're Project Ukraine. We're going to give you membership first, and then you can fulfill the EU membership requirements. Humiliating for Turkey, huh? Erdogan's not going to be happy with this change in the rules from Ursula and co. Anyway, reverse enlargement. And the problem that they have with this scheme that they have put together, changing the EU rules up, is that Hungary is not going to go for it. And so the plan is to first wait for the elections, see what happens with the elections in April. And the EU is doing their very best to make sure that their candidate, Mr. Peter Magyar, defeats Orban. And if he does not defeat Orban, then the plan is to impose Article 7, the nuclear option, to trigger the nuclear option, which is Article 7, which basically removes all of Hungary's rights, including their voting rights as an EU member state. So Orbán, he took issue with this strategy from Ursula, the first one to remove him through the elections, to defeat him in the elections, the EU meddling in Hungary's elections, but okay, to be expected. We saw what the EU did in Romania. And the second, to impose Article 7. So Orbán posted on X, the Brazilian elite's official publication, Politico, has published Brussels and Kiev's latest war plan, the five-point Zelensky plan. They have decided that Ukraine will be admitted to the Union as early as 2027. This new plan is an open declaration of war against Hungary. They disregard the decision of the Hungarian people and are determined to remove the Hungarian government by any means necessary. They want the Tisza party to come to power because then there would be no more veto, no more resistance, and no more staying out of their conflict. This April, at the ballot box, Hungarians must stop them. Fidesz is the only force standing between Hungary and Brazilian rule and the only guarantee of Hungarian sovereignty. A declaration of war against Hungary. You know, if Orbán wins in April, and it's going to be a tight race, a tight election, but if he does manage to win in April, and Ursula does trigger Article 7, I would not be surprised if Hungary exits the European Union. In the past, I thought it would never happen because Orbán, he's a Europeanist, right? He believes in the EU. He believes in Europe. He really does believe in Europe, but not this Frankenstein monster that it's become, that the EU has turned into. He does not believe in that, but he does believe in Europe and the EU, what it was many, many decades ago. But if he stays in power and they trigger that Article 7, then why would Hungary remain in Europe? It has no vote. It has no say in anything anymore. The EU is holding its funds. It's holding something like 15 or 20 billion that belongs to Hungary that they do not give Hungary. So I would not be surprised if that happens. Anyway, we will monitor the situation and let's see how all of this unfolds. Big elections in Hungary in April. So in the United States, we are now getting more and more calls for Lutnick to either step aside, to resign, or to be fired by U.S. President Trump because of Lutnick's lies under oath, actually. My understanding is that he has lied under oath. Could be wrong about that, but his lies about his connection and friendship to Epstein, and this is very problematic for the Trump administration and for Lutnick. He may be the first casualty in the United States of the Epstein file release. And Lutnick is a good friend of Trump's, and he's a very high-level cabinet official. What is he, the Commerce Secretary? But he's always hanging around with Trump, it seems. Whenever Trump is making a statement or talking to the media, you always have Lutnick kind of hovering next to Trump or behind Trump. Lutnick is always giggling and laughing as well as he's hanging behind Trump. But things are not looking good for Lutnick. He said that he only met Epstein once, or he met him once at his home or something along those lines. And then he decided that Epstein was disgusting and he was never going to meet with him ever again. And that was the only contact that he had with Epstein. And now it is coming to light that Lutnick was hanging around with Epstein for many, many years, even after his initial arrest. And he's actually admitted this in his testimony to Congress. He was called out as he was testifying to Congress about his relationship with Epstein. Thomas Massey says he has confirmed that Howard Lutnick gave Jeffrey Epstein his personal phone number with their assistants coordinating calls between the two. According to Massey, records show Lutnick and Epstein were in contact far more than previously acknowledged. Lutnick testified today that he spoke to Epstein only four times in 14 years after initially claiming during his confirmation that they had just one interaction. Howard Lutnick keeps digging himself deeper and deeper into trouble. In Polymarket, the odds of Lutnick leaving are surging. Lutnick could be the first Trump administration official to go from the release of the Epstein files. I think that's very likely now. So yeah, he lied. He lied in his confirmation. At least that's what it looks like. He said he only had one interaction with Epstein. He's actually talked about that interaction as well. He gave an interview to one of the media channels in the United States, and he talked about how Epstein invited Lutnick and his wife to his home, and Epstein showed him a massage room or a massage chair, and Lutnick was stunned at the fact that Epstein had a massage chair in his home. And Lutnick asked, Lutnick was surprised, shocked to see it. And he's like, a massage chair? And Epstein, according to Lutnick, this is what Lutnick said. And you can find it on the interwebs, this interview with Lutnick. And Epstein told Lutnick the good kind of massage, like wink, wink. And then Lutnick said that he was so disgusted by all of it that he told his wife, we're never going to come back here again, and we're never going to hang out with this guy. And now it's being revealed that, well, they were hanging out. Anyway, Lutnick, it's not looking good for him. So let's go to Clown World. I've done a circle again. Back to second cup coffee. There was a shooting in Canada, a school shooting, a horrific school shooting in Canada, which left 10 people dead, including the shooter, but a horrific school shooting that took place in Canada. And yeah, horrible development there. So let's talk about Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele is back. Oh boy. The UK has decided to bring back Christopher Steele of Russiagate fame, of Russiagate infamy. And Steele is claiming that Epstein was recruited in the 1970s by a Russian organized crime figure, a Russian organized crime figures. So basically, the UK is bringing back Christopher Steele, or they're giving Christopher Steele some media time so that he can push the whole Epstein-Russia narrative, the Epstein-Russia fake news. Yeah, let's trust Christopher Steele, everybody. Talk about being desperate. Talk about the UK intel agencies and the UK establishment scraping the absolute bottom of the freaking barrel to try and push the Epstein-Russia narrative. You bring back Christopher Steele. Ay, ay, ay. That is pretty sad, pretty pathetic from the UK establishment. So the United States, they seized a Venezuela-linked oil tanker. Why is that a clown world? Well, it's a clown world because they seized this Venezuelan oil tanker in the Indian Ocean. Yeah, they chased this oil tanker all the way to the Indian Ocean. And that is when they seized this oil tanker. The Pentagon said on Monday that it captured the tanker as part of a campaign by U.S. President Trump to cut off Venezuela's oil exports, which critics have slammed as theft and international piracy. It added that U.S. forces tracked the vessel from the Caribbean Sea to the Indian Ocean. No other nation on planet Earth has the capability to enforce its will through any domain, the Pentagon said, sharing footage of heavily armed U.S. soldiers raiding the vessel from a helicopter by land, air, or sea. Our armed forces will find you and deliver justice. You will run out of fuel long before you will outrun us. That is a direct quote from the Pentagon. That's pretty sad. That is pretty sad. The United States is chasing around tankers, Venezuelan tankers, and seizing them all the way in the Indian Ocean. That is sad, man. Oh, boy. Pirate Trump. I like it. I like seizing them tankers. I don't care if they're in the Caribbean or in the Indian Ocean. I like it. I like it a lot. Seize those tankers. I like it. Like this video, share this video, subscribe to this channel. And there was a story from Bloomberg, which claimed that Venezuela was shipping oil to Israel. Bloomberg, I believe, ran with this story. And Venezuela has come out with a statement since that story ran. And they said, this is fake news. This is false and fake news. This is what the Venezuelan government said with regards to this story. I think it is Bloomberg. I'm pretty positive Bloomberg. They're the ones that first put out this story. Bloomberg, they've burned me in the past as well. I've talked about stories from Bloomberg, and they've turned out to also be fake news stories. Bloomberg's nasty. They are nasty. You need to confirm stories that Bloomberg runs. You need to confirm those stories 5 or 6 times from different sources to make sure that they're accurate. So what else should we discuss? I think that's everything for today. I will wrap up the video there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch, and also look for us on Substack. The link is in the description box down below. I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.